Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours, the weekly podcast where I, Brent Thomas, read my novel, Deadly Troubadours. Let's begin, shall we?
Chapter 9, Demetrius Tate, Origins 2. If at the beginning of summer someone had told young Demetrius Tate that it would only take a mere month for the novelty of being surrounded by women scarcely in their nightclothes to wear off, Tate would have laughed at them for being a fool. The reality of it was the novelty started to thin after only 2 weeks. Of course, it was hard for him to tell if it was the reality of the ladies or if it was the reality of being a housekeeper. He had apprenticed himself to Bartimaeus in order to become a magician, not to learn about cleaning sheets and washing dishes. He could have learned those things at home or at any normal inn. A normal inn would also have the added benefit of making it easier to convince himself of what a bed stain wasn't. This house of ill repute, as Bartimaeus insisted it be called, had a steady stream of customers throughout the day. Men came in on their lunch breaks and just after work. They came in after dinner and after drinking. They came in at the regular establishment's last calls before slinking back home. They even came in as the sun rose for the breakfast special. Genevieve, the house madam, boasted that the Velvet Clam was the only establishment in town where a man could feast on eggs, bacon, and pussy before shoving off to work. She was certain such a menu was not stocked at the homes her customers came from. Genevieve was what Bartimaeus referred to as an impressive woman. Demetrius had a hard time seeing why. For starters, she was old. This place was full of young and pretty women, even a few girls just a few years older than Demetrius himself. There were tall ones and short ones. Their hair and skin colors ran the spectrum. Some were big and round, some were splendor and petite. One woman, Stella, had more muscles than any man Demetrius had ever seen, and he had heard that Lucinda could contort into any position a man could fancy. By comparison, Genevieve just looked like an old woman with thinning hair and too much makeup. When Tate mentioned this to his teacher, the old huckster just shook his head. "Every time I think you are making progress, you turn around and show me that you have yet to look in the heart of anything. Yes, there are more comely lasses here, but all that is a pretty package. A pretty package is one of the easiest things in the world to fool people with. What is it you think we are selling to the rubes of the world? Illusion and fantasy. If you still judge people like that, then you really are missing the point." Despite the speech, Demetrius noted that in the evenings Bartimaeus retired with a pretty package and not the one he deemed most impressive. The days went one after another. Nothing really changed. Demetrius practiced his sleight of hand and various distractions. In the mornings, he charmed the ladies of the evening by sneezing out hard-boiled eggs. In the evenings, he earned some coin from customers by having a hiccuping fit that led to several lace bodices coming undone. The second night he tried this little feat, Genevieve told him that he owed the house both a standard operating fee as well as a percentage. In return, he could play his little tricks and she wouldn't beat his ass sideways. The standard fee was too high for his little income, and he was forced to retire that maneuver from his repertoire. Bartimaeus had a unique relationship with Genevieve and the ladies of the Velvet Clam. In addition to his marketing skills, such as supplying tinctures which could turn any man into incredible virile lovers, which all the ladies vouched for, even if it did taste very similar to watered-down white wine mixed with curry powder, it did turn out that he had some actual practical knowledge in treating and eliminating certain carnal diseases that could run rampant in such establishments. He also supplied cosmetics, dyes, perfumes, and even cut and styled hair, and in return asked only lodgings, meals, and, of course, trade. Demetrius wondered at the connection between Bartimaeus and Genevieve. On slow nights they would sit on matching chairs in front of the fireplace. They shared whispered conversations and guarded chuckles and looked for all the world as two grandparents giggling together in a house full of relations over the holidays. Then, at the end of each night, they would spend this way. After a long period of silence, Bartimaeus would stand, affectionately rest his hand on her shoulder, and whisper, "Good night, Jenny." He was the only one who could call her Jenny. She would pat his hand and reply, "Good night, Barty," a name Demetrius would never dare use. They would share a look, and Bartimaeus would retire to his upstairs room. A few moments later, Genevieve would give a loud sniff and then call to one of the girls who was unoccupied for the evening. "Love, why don't you go keep Mr. Bartimaeus company for the evening? Be a good girl for him." That was how their evenings together invariably ended. Demetrius thought it was odd that in an establishment that was full of rumors and gossip as the Velvet Clam, there was no idle speculation on what history might lie between the two. To the girls, at least, it was well understood that in this house certain areas were off-limits. While the master was seen as having his uses, the protégé was seen as an impish little scamp, which, surprisingly enough, the women adored. He was the little brother they all wanted to boss around, so when it was discovered that his 12th birthday was 2 nights away, a surprise party was put into works. That morning, he was shaken awake as the sky was just turning pale. "Come on now." He blinked his eyes clear. The voice belonged to the dark-haired Eliza, not to be confused with the blonde-haired Eliza. "Miss Genevieve says there are lots of chores needing to get done." He barely had time to filch a few hard-boiled eggs and a biscuit before he was put to work. It seemed a week's worth of chores were being crammed into one day. He gathered and washed laundry, hung sheets on the roof, scrubbed and swept floors, washed windows, wiped cobwebs out of the corners. He was even given a box of flatware and told that Miss Genevieve wanted to be able to see her face in the spoons by the evening meal. When the exhausted young man entered the formal dining room to put away the freshly polished silver, the last thing he expected to see were streamers adorning the walls in a room full of cheering ladies of the evening, their smiling madam, and a grinning Bartimaeus. "Happy birthday, my dear boy. Now, let us dine." The meal brought forth was mustard-seared pork chops served with onions and mushrooms, sautéed in butter and almonds, salad made up of three types of dark, leafy greens that Demetrius could not pronounce, sliced tomato, and shredded carrot. Freshly baked wheat dinner rolls were used to sop up any stray juice from the pork or stray dressing from the salad. Wines, white, red, and rose, came forth for the purpose of getting the newly minted young man tipsy. The talk soon became bawdy and the laughter loud. Most of the girls only dined in spurts. They would come in for a few quick bites before rushing out to greet a new customer and perhaps to become occupied for 30 minutes or longer. Two of the more popular girls were quickly engaged for the entire evening. Demetrius asked if they would find time to eat, and Bartimaeus made a comment that he did not understand, but set the rest of the room howling with laughter. Demetrius smirked and took a deep drink of the sweet rose wine. One of the girls, Catherine, was in the room the entire evening. She was 15 and had skin the color of cream. Tiny freckles dotted her nose and cheeks. Her dark hair just brushed the tops of her shoulders, and the candlelight brought out the color of the strands that had been streaked by the sun. She sat across the table, and Demetrius kept getting caught in the deep pool of brown that were her eyes. The more he drank, the more he stared. The more he stared, the more she stared back, her lips pursed into a delicate smile. He had never noticed her lips before. They looked soft, moist, inviting. He started absently thinking about what those lips could likely do. The room was full of the dull roar of others talking. He didn't listen. He just stared at the girl across the table. His wine glass was empty. His unsteady hand reached out for the closest bottle. It was empty. Across the table, Catherine rose. She was wearing a nightgown that could almost pass for a shift, except the hem was too short and the straps merely strings. She was coming closer. Her chest was spilling out. What did they feel like? She took a bottle of wine. They looked soft, like marshmallows. Would they taste as sweet? The room had grown quiet. They watched as young Catherine took even younger Demetrius by the hand and stood him up. The top of his head came just to her eyes. She whispered something, and he grabbed his wine glass from the table. She led him out of the room. As they walked, he held the glass by the stem, facing down. Every other step, another droplet that was barely holding on to the inside of the glass would spill forth onto the wooden floor. The trail could be followed to one of the rooms typically favored by the few noblemen who sought the comforts the Velvet Clam offered. On this, his birthday, Tate was to be treated as a young prince rather than a mere huckster's apprentice. The room smelled of perfume and fresh flowers. His mouth was dry. She led him over to an overstuffed couch that was softer and more cushioned than the mat he typically slept on. She straddled him and stretched herself into what she knew was one of her most alluring angles. His eyes thirstily drank in her curves. Beneath her, she could feel him growing. She squirmed closer. Automatically, his hands rose. She plucked them from the air and placed them on either side of her ass. Right away, he began to knead her flesh, and she cooed encouragement. She arched her back and lowered herself, creating a warm friction between them. He gasped. The heat between her legs was just above him as the thin fabric rode up past her hips. Her milky bosom swayed just in front of his eyes. He leaned forward and gave the inside of the right one a kiss. She moaned and pulled down a strap to free the breast. He caught his first sight of her pink nipple. The tip was hard like a berry and sat on its own pink saucer of flesh. She grasped his head and led him to the berry. She tightened her grip as the tongue found purchase. She reached down between her legs. His trousers were fastened by three simple leather ties. She had them undone in a few simple pulls. He felt her hand begin to dig inside. He tried to lean back to allow her greater access while keeping his firm grip on her backside and his mouth sealed around the soft breast. She was so close, he could almost feel her fingertips. A scream ruptured through the room. Catherine sprang away from him. The scream came again. It was full of pain. Recognition hit. Ashley! Catherine grabbed the unused bottle and hoisted it like a cudgel, ignoring the untasted wine that splashed out of the uncorked bottle. The screaming continued. She cocked back the bottle and opened the door. On the floor of the hall was Ashley. She was naked with bloody slashes along her back. Blood was pooling around her. It streamed from the long wounds that trickled from her mouth and from a patch of scalp lacking hair. Behind her stood a man, tall and handsome. He was shirtless and his muscles taut. His eyes were pinpricks of darkness and madness. In one hand was a thick tress of hair, with bits of flesh still attached to the roots. In the other hand was a wicked knife, still dripping. He still wore trousers and boots. One booted foot was grinding the screaming girl's ankle into the floor. The sound of grinding and popping bone mixed with Ashley's cries and the clatter of footsteps coming from downstairs. From his position on the couch, Tate had full view of the scene. He tried to stand and help. His legs would not hold and folded underneath him. From the ground, he watched as Catherine sprang forward like a tiger. The wine bottle shattered across the man's face in an explosion of glass and a mixture of wine and blood. She quickly brought the ragged edges of the bottle back, raking it against his stomach, tearing flesh as it went. The man took his eyes off Ashley and focused on Catherine. He seemed to little notice the graveness of his injuries. He even chuckled as Catherine attacked a third time, bearing what was left of the jagged handle in his chest. With the quickness of a spider, he lashed out with the knife. Catherine stumbled back. She didn't scream. Demetrius remembered thinking that meant she must be all right. If she were hurt, she would have screamed. She began the slow fall that took her back into the room she was so recently entertaining Demetrius in. She hit the ground facing the young man. She didn't scream. Her cream skin had a pallid look to it now. She couldn't scream. Across her throat was a smooth red line from which her life flowed out. She gurgled. Her eyes found him. They were so scared. He watched as the red stain spread across the floor until it brushed his outstretched fingers. He saw the eyes grow dim and cold. In the distance, he saw shapes. He could not make out the other girls and their own knives. He did not learn until the next day that it was Genevieve and her crossbow that put an end to the monster. He lay on the floor staring at Catherine, who was beautiful, brave, sad, and dead. He stared until one of the girls noticed them laying there. He stared until Bartimaeus came and gathered up the young man, who in reality was still just a boy. He looked into the face of his friend and teacher, with its big nose and curled mustache. "Help her," he pleaded. "Use your magic." Bartimaeus just frowned and slowly shook his head. "I can't, my dear boy. There is no magic. Not for that." He was given hot tea. Bartimaeus made sure it was blended with something that would give the boy a dreamless sleep. Demetrius lay in bed and felt the tea begin to do its work. He stared into the darkness above him and said a prayer to the spirit who goes by many names. "Let me learn magic. Real magic. Please let me learn." He closed his eyes and tried to shut out the horror of the night as the tea pushed him into a deep sleep. Out in the darkness, his prayer was heard.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Deadly Troubadours is now available as an ebook from Smashwords.com, Amazon.com, and Apple's online store. If you want to know more about me, Brent Thomas, you can visit my website at deadlytroubadour.com. You can also like me on Facebook by searching for the page Deadly Troubadours. This podcast is available on iTunes, so if you have a moment, please rate and review the show. While you are there, why not check out my other podcasts, Comics League International and Living Japan. If you want to contact me, email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter at deadtroubadour. Once again, thanks for listening. If you are enjoying the book, please share it with your friends. And please tune in next week for the continuing adventures of the Deadly Troubadours.